Hey everyone, welcome to the Front Stretch Podcast. I'm your host, Dustin Albino. In a moment, I'll be joined by my co-host, Mike Neff, to discuss a fun weekend of racing at Auto Club Speedway that saw Alex Bowman dominate en route to his second career victory. We'll also go in-depth on how each manufacturer started off the 2020 season, and if people are overreacting about Toyota's struggles, or lack thereof, to start 2020. Neff and I dive into, yet again, what is and what isn't a caution at the Cup level, as there was a questionable call in Sunday's race. Harrison Burton scored his first NASCAR win in Saturday's Xfinity race, and we believe the three Joe Gibbs Racing's babyfaces are going to surprise a lot of people this year. NASCAR announced it will move to an 18-inch aluminum wheel with one lug nut for the next-gen car, so that gets a rant from each of us. Finally, we've got Anthony Alfredo joining the podcast to discuss his Xfinity debut for Richard Childress Racing, where he brought the 21 car home sixth. But before we get started, make sure to rate, review, and subscribe to the Front Stretch Podcast, as those ratings help us out tremendously. Now let's talk some racing with Neff. All right, Neff, I thought another good weekend of racing at California Auto Club Speedway. Alex Bowman came out the victor on Sunday in the Cup race. Kind of surprising in my eyes. You know, if you said preseason Alex Bowman's going to dominate one of the first three races, I would have called you crazy. And again, like 4 weeks ago when we did our preseason predictions, I didn't even have the 88 team making the playoffs. I was wrong. Because unless we get the 17 winners, which, I mean, this year so far seems to be kind of wide open. Yeah, but the 88 team came to play on Sunday at Fontana. And like I said, pretty surprising, but hey, when you have a mile and a half difference on your 10-lap average in final practice, odds are you're going to be pretty good in the race.
You would hope. I mean, every now and then that practice time sheet can be deceiving. But, yeah, the 88 was there to play all weekend. And I agree with you. Early on, you know, we wouldn't have picked them just on the history of Hendrick over the last couple of years. But Hendrick, in general, has come to play this year. They have definitely shown more speed. They're kind of leading the Chevy brigade back, which is always a good thing for the sport because so many teams run Chevys. But it has definitely been the 88 has kind of been the flagship for Hendrick so far. Elliott's shown flashes, and Jimmy Johnson this weekend was showing some great flashes, but it didn't work in the end. For the 48, but the 88 was definitely there. And how about we've had three races this year, and all three of them have numbers on the car that are I forget what you call it, but they're duplicate numbers.
Double-digit.
The 11, yeah. The 22, and the 88. That's going to be hard to mimic that for the whole year, I think.
For sure, and also it's going to be hard to mimic because we're going to eventually run out of drivers, but there's been 15 top five finishes, obviously, this year. They've all been by different drivers. No driver has two top five so far through the first three races, which is the first time that's been done in the modern era. But Alex Bowman, he was just the dominant car on Sunday. And, you know, he'd get back in traffic, he'd fight to the lead. It seemed like a couple times he'd have bad restarts. And like you said, Chevy's been on a mission. And obviously that started over the offseason with the addition of the new nodes that they've got. But when it comes to Bowman, like I said, I didn't have him making the playoffs. So for him to be the lead guy, I shouldn't say the lead guy, but so far the lead guy this year, at least in Hendrick terms, it's kind of surprising, Neff.
I agree. I mean, I've always thought Alex was a great guy, and I think he's a decent driver, but I've never looked at him and considered him championship caliber and the guy that would be the leading force, you know, and everybody else is trying to chase down. And it seems as though as he's getting up there a little bit more in years and becoming one of the, I mean, he's not an elder statesman yet, but he's getting to be a more senior driver. It seems that maturity is treating him well. And I think that in the long run, I think we're all going to be surprised because I feel like he's turned a corner now and I always felt like he was intelligent, but he didn't want to take the time to think. And I feel like now, not only is he intelligent, but he's realizing what a cerebral thing racing is. And I think the whole mental game of it is really starting to come to the forefront for him.
Yeah, and much like probably, I don't know, half the field at least, yeah, his contract's up at the end of the year, and he's racing for his job, quite literally. And so, you know, a win definitely helps, but Do you think it's about winning this year? Or do you, because the past 2 years he's made the playoffs and he hasn't gotten very far. He's gotten to the round of 12, and I think last year's bounced after the first round. So does he have to make a deep playoff run, you think, to keep the 88? Or do you think 3-4 wins helps secure him for at least next year?
Can I say, if you win 3 races, I would think it would be pretty hard for an owner to kick you out of a seat. I was actually just kind of thinking about it, but I didn't go research it this weekend as to how many drivers in the last 20 years have won a race and then been booted from their seat. In my mind, I vividly remember Newman because he won the Brickyard, and then he'd already been booted by the time he won it.
Kenseth.
But it's not a real common thing if you win a race. Needless to say, you win 3 races, I think it would be very hard for them to boot him out, especially if you've got Johnson leaving. You have Elliott, if he's, I'm assuming he'll be around that win total as well, but will Byron be there? You know, if William Byron wins 1 race or doesn't win a race, how do you boot Alex if he wins 3? I can't wrap my head around the aesthetics of that.
Yeah, I mean, it all comes down to sponsorship, I guess, in a way. Even though Hendrick's proven that he'll put his name on the car for really any of his drivers. But yeah, it'd be hard to... You brought up the Bowman and Byron comparison. I think that's a good one, because if you look at Byron, like in his... I saw something on Twitter the other day in like his first, 75 races that he's now been in the series compared to like Daniel Suarez's. Suarez's numbers are actually better, and he's got booted from 2 rides already. So I don't know. It's kind of, I feel like Byron's, I don't know what his contract is, but he's got to start performing, because you look at, he's yet to get a top 10 this year. He's been competitive at times. Like on Sunday, he was kind of out to lunch for the beginning of the part of the race, then got up towards the top 5, ultimately finished 15th, finished last in the Daytona 500, but he got wrecked by Ricky Stenhouse. I mean, let's be honest. It happens. And then at Vegas last week, honestly, probably should have finished 2nd or 3rd, but then got booted out of the way on that last restart with 2 laps to go. So, I mean, shit happens, but I think he's got to start performing. Because if you look at him compared to, and I guess this will tie into our next point, is Chevy back. Because Bowman dominated the race. Chase was top 10 really all day, finished 4th. And Jimmy was really top 3 to 5 all day, finished 7th. Faded there at the end, which he said after the race was his worst run of the day, the final run. So I bring up the Chevy aspect, Neff. Hendrick's definitely looked pretty good to start off the year. That's the best they've looked in probably 3 to 4 years, if not longer. There's a lot of talk about all these manufacturers and Chevy being back. And like I said, impressive again, but are they back, or are we overreacting only being really 2 real races into the year?
Yeah, I mean, we're at that point where everybody's overreacting and trying to lay out the whole year 3 races into things. But I definitely feel as though, just from the track record of the two, Vegas and California, it seems as though they are definitely miles ahead of where they have been the last couple of years. So are they back? We'll see. You know, if we end up with, half of the playoff teams being Chevys, then we'll know they're back. But at this point, I feel like they've definitely turned it around and they're far more competitive. But as you said, it's still overreaction time at this point. I always feel like Charlotte is the barometer. When you get to the 600, you then kind of take stock in where everybody's at for the year, and that usually will give you an idea of who came to play and who's in trouble. Till then, everybody's still just kind of working the kinks out and getting ready to run for their new year. And one other thing I did want to mention you mentioned Suarez. That guy's been jobbed. I mean, let's be real. He has done an excellent job, in my opinion, in his rides that he's had and just not been given a chance to mature. So I know he's in a tough spot right now and doing what he has to stay relevant in the sport, but I'm hoping he gets another shot in a decent ride, because I think he truly could be a star in the sport.
I agree with you to a degree. We could literally go 30 minutes on that topic, I feel like. So let's save that for another day. But as far as Chevy, I think it's way too soon. I know, you know, we've had a race now at Vegas, which will have in the playoffs. Fontana, there's really no track on the circuit like it. It's interesting,
and too. It's amazing. That's the thing about Fontana. It used to be the worst race of the year. It was like, God, we're going to Fontana. Now it is one of the top two or three tracks on the schedule.
And even though Bowman won by 9 seconds, and granted, you know, he was about 5.5 up when Ryan Blaney started to back off because he had a flat tire, I thought it was very entertaining. The restarts were probably the best. I mean, since this package has come into play last year, the restarts have always been good. But at Fontana, where the widest that track is, you can get 5-6 wide, and they definitely were at times. So it's got to be a spotter's nightmare. But and even the driver said, I heard Eric Jones said it's kind of a nightmare as a driver to, because if you lose momentum, especially on the backstretch, and you got a line of cars on the top, you're getting freight trained. But going back to the Chevy aspect, it's, in my opinion, way too soon. Like you said, the Coke 600 is probably a good barometer. That's roughly halfway through the regular season. We've had two races now outside of Daytona that are really on worn-out asphalt. I mean, Vegas, compared to previous years, and it has aged over the years, obviously. But Fontana is very abrasive on tires. Two of the next three races are also like that, with Atlanta and Homestead. So it's maybe that has something to do with it. I mean, you don't know until you got to give it some time for sure. So Coke 600, probably a good barometer on where teams stand. But it's definitely, I guess, a compelling storyline going forward, because we haven't seen Chevy be this good this early in the season. And like I said, probably 4 or 5 years at the minimum.
Yeah, I mean, they've been, I mean, let's face it, they've been out to lunch.
Yeah.
And, I mean, even Jimmy winning his seventh, they weren't good that year.
They had a bad year.
I mean, they were far from a dominant team, but they won when they had to. But, yeah, it's been a long time coming. Trust me, those GM folks have been feeling the heat for sure. Not only from the higher-ups at General Motors, but from their teams, because I think that pointy nose put them at a disadvantage, and it seems that this new nose is helping. I don't know how much. Again, let's give it a few more weeks, and then we'll decide, but they are definitely looking better than they have for the last probably 3 years anyway.
For sure. And on the flip side of that, Nath, there's a lot of talk going. I couldn't believe how much talk there was about this going into the weekend about Toyota and how bad they were at Vegas. Now, as we discussed last week, I feel like there's a real big overreaction when it comes to Toyota. Because even though after the race, you know, Kyle Busch, he finished second, said they have a lot of work to do. In my opinion, it just seems like a huge overreaction, because at a time in the race, all four of the Gibbs cars were in the top 10. Bell, you can't really judge because he had an engine failure early. But they all started in towards the back and all raced to the front. I mean, that's what we're used to. And let's be honest, like, Eric Jones for 3 years now has been kind of the fourth driver in Gibbs stable. I guess third when Suarez was there. So over the past 3 years, he's definitely been the fourth. Martin Truex Jr. was in contention for a top five finish for sure. Until his pit crew, what was it, the rear tire changer had a cramp in his arm. So,
which was really a weird situation.
Yeah, I've never seen anything like that, at least recently. But he had a realistic top five run going, as he did also at Las Vegas. Probably could have won that race. This has got to be an overreaction, right?
Oh yeah, absolutely overreaction. I mean, the problem is, last year they won half the races.
Mm-hmm.
You know? So when you win 19 races in a season and you come out and, for all intents and purposes, aren't that competitive, although I still maintain Kyle Busch had the best car at Daytona if his engine hadn't let go. But, you know, they were nowhere in Vegas. And, yes, Kyle came in second at Fontana. He always runs well there, but he wasn't really in contention most of the day. And it was, of all the Toyotas, Truex looked the fastest.
Oh, for sure.
But unfortunately for him, he ran into the wall. which I'm surprised he didn't threaten the wall on his radio as well, since he's busy threatening everybody else. but yeah, again, too early in the season. We can't be overreacting to stuff at this point. Toyota's going to be just fine.
Yeah, I totally agree on that. I really couldn't believe how much talk there was about Toyota not performing through the first, really the first race, and then, you know, obviously that went into the California weekend, because they're going to be around. They got Hamlin, Truex, Kyle Busch. They all made the championship four last year. It's the same package. Now, I mean, they've had tech problems, and, you know, we can get into that if you want, over the past, Hamlin and Kyle got 10-point penalty, I think, last week. Truex couldn't even qualify this week because his car failed inspection three times. I mean, maybe there was something they were hitting on that last year that wasn't found in the NASCAR tech inspection. I don't know, because it's weird to see that they – I'm not going to say they don't have the speed that they did last year. It's just other teams have improved.
It does make you wonder if there was something to whatever they had or did on the nose. And again, it was fractions of an inch, but fraction of an inch make a big difference in the sport these days. So it very well could be something that they had figured out, and now that's not there anymore, because obviously NASCAR's going to be checking for it every week. But I still feel like, and it comes from effort. You know, don't get me wrong, Toyota spends more time in the wind tunnel than anybody else in the sport. By far. I mean, it's ridiculous the amount of time they spend in a wind tunnel. And that pays off for them in the long run. So even if they are a little bit behind right now, which I think has been more just a coincidence, I don't think they're going to be behind for long.
I agree with you, obviously, completely. But I will say that if they're not in contention for the win this weekend at Phoenix, then it might be time to maybe amp up the worrisome meter a little bit, only because last year, and for really the past three or four races, Gibbs has dominated there. Kyle Busch dominated the spring race. Denny Hamlin, you know, destroyed the competition in the fall race. And that's the start of the championship this year in November. So if they're out to lunch this weekend, which I really don't think they've been out to lunch either the first 2 weeks, then there might be a problem. What says you about that?
Again, I guess we got to see the circumstances. I mean, if they show up and they're just slow and they're not competitive all weekend, then yeah, I would say that they might have to start worrying about something. If, you know, they show up and they have speed in practice and then they make mistakes during the race or something and they're not really in contention at the end, that could be more of a focus problem and a issue where they needed to get back on the ball. I find it hard to believe they won't be in contention this weekend because of the fact that it's a short track, and yes, we can get in that argument. but I feel like the driver is more in control and makes more of a difference than the car does at Phoenix. And that's why I think you'll see them back up front.
Right. And going off that, the whole Toyota banner, you kind of brought up in passing the Truex comment. I'm curious to get your take on this, because this might get a rant from you, I feel like. So during the race, I'm not exactly sure when it was, second stage maybe, maybe even the first stage. Put your earmuffs on, kids, because this is going to get pretty vulgar, though, it was said on the radio. And I'd love to, so we're recording this Tuesday morning. I'd love to be a fly on the wall at the Joe Gibbs Racing competition meeting this morning. However, I'm not. So I'm going to read off the quote that Martin Truex said over his radio about his teammates. Fuck the 20 and fuck the 11. They can both kiss my fucking ass. Neff. That's, I mean, obviously frustration. But we've seen Truex do this before, and he had later comments about Joey Logano and how he raced him, saying next time he does that, he'll wreck him. We've seen that before, and nothing happened.
And he doesn't.
Yeah. What's going on with Truex? Because is he just frustrated with the way the season started? Or when did he learn to not know how to race people during the race, or not want to be raced hard during the race?
I don't really know. I mean, I know he's always throwing these little tidbits out, but it was like once every four or five races you'd get it. And for whatever reason, this year it seems like it's every stage. I mean, he's just whining, and I don't know that it's necessary. Again, I understand that they were trying to get from the back to the front. If they worked together and lined up, they could have gained on the people in front of them, but it's racing. In the end, it's you and your car against everybody else. And yeah, it's nice if your teammates can help you out, but if they can't, they can't. And then he went off on Logano saying he should have wrecked him. And I'm like, looking at the replay going, Logano should have wrecked you. You know, because Logano was up against the wall and had the momentum and had the run, was at his quarter as Truex was coming up. And I'm like, if anything, if you had come up further, Logano had every right to freaking hook you into the wall. And, you know, nobody wants to do that or see that, so I was glad that didn't happen. But I felt Truex was completely in the wrong going off on Logano. I don't know about the teammate thing is a different deal. I'm sure there's frustration for him. As you said, they haven't started the year off as well as they wanted to. They didn't get a qualifying run, so that had to be frustrating. He's got a new crew chief, so he's got to be feeling pressure that if he doesn't perform, people are going to say it was all Cole Pearn. So, you know, that messes with the mind a little bit. So there's, you know, and you don't know what else is going on just in life. So there could be a lot of different pressures playing on him. But I feel like at this juncture, for the next couple weeks, he'd be better served to shut up and race and stay off the radio when it comes to threatening other people and just go out and get the job done and then maybe get back into being vocal. But the button's on the steering wheel and you can use it anytime you want to. The thing you just have to remember is that everybody can hear it.
Right. He's definitely letting this all get to his head. And it honestly might be hindering his performance, even though there was nothing he could do about the pit crew issue later in the race. And I think he asked over the radio what the hell happened there.
Yeah.
He had a right to do that.
Sure.
But as far as, like you said, it's racing. Even though you're racing your teammates and, you all start in the rear, especially Truex start, you know, not being able to qualify, you want to go to the front. But Martin's obviously one of the nicer drivers in the sport. However, don't want to get to your head, man. Like, it's a race. And we've heard these empty promises before. And I saw a tweet earlier on Sunday said, talks like Earnhardt, drives like Martin. I mean, just, it'd be, he's just going to get taken advantage of if he continues this. Because he never.
Yeah, it's, at this point, he's got to wreck somebody. I mean, it's that simple. Instead of constantly threatening that you're going to wreck somebody. And then you can start the conversation. But he's always been about being a clean driver and not wrecking people. And if that's the case, fine, but shut up. If you're going to not wreck people based on your style, then stop threatening to wreck people on your radio.
And especially the Logano aspect of it, too. Like, obviously, we all remember what happened in Martinsville 2018 in the fall. I don't know. You could call that dirty. You could call it racing on a short track. But Logano definitely roughed up Truex. They had a good finish coming across the line. Logano locked himself into Homestead with the win. And then Truex, after the race, he might have won the race, but he's not going to win the war. And then what did he do at Homestead?
Pulled over and let him drive by.
Yeah, for the championship. So, I don't know. The 19 team's got a... And the thing is they're probably the fastest Toyota car on the track right now. In the last two races, anyway. They didn't have a good Daytona, but they were decent. Could have won, like I said, at Vegas before he got in the wall. And then this past weekend, just beat themselves. So, I don't know. There's got to be some tension there. And like I mentioned about 5 minutes ago, I'd like to be a fly on the wall this morning at that competition meeting. Because that'd be an interesting conversation.
Maybe. Or maybe he didn't say anything.
You don't think it would have got brought up at all?
Maybe. I don't know if he would have brought it up.
No, I don't think he would have. But I think maybe someone higher up would have. I don't know. It would be nice to be a fly on the wall for that. Because... I don't know. Just a lot of stuff going on.
I mean, I'd be curious to hear what was talked about, but I don't know if it was really that big of a deal when you get down to it.
Yeah, because we hear teammates go back and forth and banter about each other all the time. But this was obviously really direct. So, I don't know. It'll be... I guess this brings up another topic. Do you feel like Truex fits in with the JGR camp? Because we've seen Erik Jones... I wasn't planning on talking about this, but Erik Jones has risen up through the Toyota camp, you know, with KBM, then JGR and Xfinity for a couple of years, Gibbs, Furniture, then Gibbs. Kyle's been there for over a decade now, as has Hamlin, 15 years. Does Truex fit in with them?
It seems like it. I mean, I feel like he's kind of in that same clean-cut image as Jones is. You know, Denny's a little bit of a loose cannon, and then Kyle is Kyle.
Right.
But I think Martin and Jones are pretty similar. They're both kind of reserved, don't really rough people up when they're racing, and just kind of get out there and go about their business. So I think he fits in fine there as well as he would anywhere else.
Yeah. I mean, and he has experience working with them before, too, obviously with Michael Waltrip Racing. So he's been Toyota teammates in the past with, and obviously this is his fifth year now with Toyota, you know, going back to his Furniture Row days in the past 5 years. But he's with Michael Waltrip Racing in the past, so he definitely has some experience working with them. But it is interesting that some of the comments he made over the radio, and it can only bring up speculation. So, you know, we've talked about Chevy. We talked about Toyota. Let's bring up Fords now too, Neff, because in my opinion, I've been most impressed this year with Ryan Blaney. And I know he doesn't have the finishes to go for that, but he finished second in the 500 in a photo finish, really. And then probably should have won or could have won Vegas until Todd Gordon called him a pit road. And then this week had, I would say, the second best car by far. Because, like I mentioned earlier, Bowman was 5.5 seconds up on him, while he was 5.5 seconds up on Kyle for third, until he had a flat tire late. So, you know, we talked on one of the podcasts over the offseason about the Penske, kind of the mix-up in their crew chief lineup with their drivers. And I said I thought Ryan Blaney would be the most beneficial of the three, and yep. It's definitely looked that way through the first 3 weeks.
I agree. I mean, I was with you. I thought they were going to be the best pair out of the three in the swap ups, and I want to give a shout out to Ryan, just the way he handles himself. NASCAR asked him to come to the bullpen after the race, even though he didn't finish in the top 10, and he was obviously very disappointed in the fact that, I mean, he was sitting in a second place finish and had a chance. Very outside, but had a chance of making a run at the win, and then had to, you know, pull in and ends up off the lead lap. But he came up and didn't shy away from questions and answered it all like the pro that he is. And he has handled multiple situations so far early in his career where other drivers that we know of, and some that we may have just been talking about, would not have handled it that well at all. And I've just always been impressed with Ryan with the way he keeps a level head and is so accommodating to the media on times and on days when he doesn't have to be and most other people wouldn't be. So that said, I agree with you. I mean, he's your points leader for a reason. It isn't like they've been going out of their way to try to grab these stage points. They've just been that good. And I feel like it's only a matter of time before they get some. And he's one of those that, at least as you look at it from the outside right now, would not be surprising to see him win three or four in a row once they get on a roll.
And that's what he needs to, I feel like. Maybe not to win three or four in a row, but to win early. Because if you look at his career, I mean, he won at Pocono a few years ago, and then he won at the Roval, and then at Talladega, both later in the season the past 2 years. He's been good before to start off seasons. I think last year, like, he was inconsistent, but when he was finishing the top five, it was leading laps and being super consistent at the front. This year, he definitely has the speed so far, and it looks like the Todd Gordon, him and Todd Gordon have definitely hit on something right away. And like you've mentioned before, I think you've said you think Todd Gordon's the best crew chief in the garage, right?
Yeah, I think from a mechanical and overall holistic view of the car, I think he's better than anybody.
And we saw what he did with Joey when they first got matched up in 2013. I mean, Joey left and he ran with Gibbs for 4 years and didn't do a whole lot. And then he comes to Penske and it was the change that Logano needed. And the matchup with Gordon, they had a lot of success together. Made 3 championship 4 appearances. Yeah, I believe, 3. And then won the championship in 2018. So I think this is exactly what Blaney needed and he's capitalizing on it. He's even though he's got 2 finishes in the past 2 weeks outside the top 10, he still has 11-point lead in the championship, so he's earning those stage points. He's obviously a good super speedway driver, too. He ran well at Phoenix here in the last fall. It was a third-place car all day, finished third. So I'm definitely been most impressed with that 12 team thus far, even though the results might not be there. Now,
I'm with you. I think it's just a matter of putting the whole thing together, and it's – We've seen it with lots of different drivers over time, but this year more than ever, I feel like they've got all the pieces, and it's just it's been more of a bad luck thing than a learning to put the pieces together thing. And I think they just got to shake off the bad luck.
Right. Now, a couple more topics on that for sure. I want to talk about the Denny Hamlin, Kyle Larson dust up, particularly because Chip Ganassi went on Twitter this morning. We'll get to that in a moment. What did you think of the Larson-Hamlin situation? Because these guys, you know, for people that don't know, are great friends off the track. They golf together. They play a lot of sports together in Hamlin's group. So it looked like just kind of a bump draft go wrong.
I think Denny needs to learn when to back off. I mean, it is not just with Kyle. We've seen it. We saw it in Martinsville with Chase Elliott. We've seen it multiple times with different drivers that he stays on that bumper too far into the corner. And I don't know if it's a thing where he knows these guys are that good of drivers and he can get away with it, or he thinks he can get away with it, but it's bitten a few of these drivers now, and eventually people are going to start returning the favor.
Right.
So I watched it during the race and I was like, that was just totally uncalled for, especially that early in the race. I did get a kick out of the fact that Fox flashed back and did the replay of it right before they went to the Wendy's Offers Breakfast Now commercial. I don't know if that was intentional or not. It certainly seemed that way.
Larson driving a McDonald's car.
Exactly. But I don't think there's any bad blood between Denny and Kyle. I don't know that there's a lot of bad blood between Denny and anybody. He just... We've always known that he's an aggressive driver, but it seems like that specific move is getting away from him. And I don't know. I don't know if he needs to have the favor returned once or twice, and then maybe he'll realize just how uncomfortable he's making people. Or, you know, maybe Chip Ganassi needs to take his watch off. I don't know. But for those people that aren't aware of it, there was a tweet put out after that where Kyle and Denny were at the grocery store, and Denny basically drilled Kyle in the back of the ankle with the shopping cart.
Which definitely and hurt.
Anybody who's ever had that happen, which is 99% of humanity, knows how much that can hurt. And that is what Mr. Ganassi took exception to, was that, you know, you're dealing with my multi-million-dollar driver here, and I'm not finding it humorous that you're trying to kill his Achilles. Yeah. I don't think there's any bad blood with Denny and really anybody, except maybe Chase Elliott. But in the grand scheme, I think it's just a matter of I don't know that anybody's done him that same way going into a corner. And I think maybe somebody needs to do it a couple times to really bring him back to reality on it.
Yeah, and when you think of Denny, I mean, him and he's had a lot of dust-ups with some drivers. You know, you think of the Chase Elliott, probably the most recent notable one. But Logano, too, I guess that's probably most recent since that happened. I mean, it's happened many a times. They've had a lot of run-ins. But last fall when really Denny, it looked like he just put Joey in the wall, didn't give him any room. I kept coming up on him off turn four. So as far as the Larson thing, I wouldn't expect anything to carry over. But when you think of Denny, he's one of the most respected drivers in the garage. I mean, when the Drivers Council was intact, he was the guy that kind of led the whole thing. And he comes up with all these great ideas. I'll be honest, he's one of the best drivers, I think, for media, because he gives you his opinion and he thinks about it. You can tell he's thought about it. So, I definitely respect that part of Denny. But you mentioned the tweet with Ganassi, so I'm going to bring it up. So as you said, there was a video that went out, I believe Sunday night, where Hamlin ran over the back Achilles, the Achilles of Kyle Larson in a grocery store. I believe they're in Scottsdale, Arizona, because they were golfing this week. They stayed out west between Fontana and Phoenix this weekend. And so you see Hamlin laughing in the video, obviously a joke. And then just shy of 8 o'clock this morning on Tuesday, Ganassi goes on Twitter and says, "Hey, at Denny Hamlin, I have a building full of people, including myself, that do not think that's funny. Hashtag bad taste." So as we said, this looks to be just all in fun. But Ganassi's comments, what do you take in that? And, I mean, does he have a point? Because, as you said, I mean, that does hurt.
I mean, he has a point. Just like I said, he's his multi-million-dollar driver.
Yeah, big investment.
That is pretty much the face of Ganassi as far as stock car racing goes. You know, Kurt is a great ambassador for them, but Kurt's only going to be around for another couple of years. And Larson, who knows how long he's going to be with Ganassi, but, you know, Chip has spent a lot of money on that young man, developing him and getting him to where he's at in the sport. And some knucklehead doing something stupid that knocks him out of the car for a month would not be a good thing. And so I can understand why Chip would not find that funny. The rest of us that are sophomoric humorous kind of got a kick out of it. But at the same time, we also understand that pain. So, Chip's being the concerned father. You know, that's his boy, and he's going to look out for him and back him up. But I didn't see anything out of Kyle to say that he was upset about it. And I don't think he was. And it's just Denny being Denny. So I understand Chip's point of view. I don't blame him for being a little defensive about it. But in the end of it, there's a lot bigger things we got to worry about right now than Kyle's Achilles.
And Hamlin did pay the grocery bill after what I saw on Twitter.
Did he say $618?
Yeah.
What the hell are they buying?
They are staying
out. They're out there for a week, right? Yeah. They're not buying groceries for 2 months.
So $618 it cost him. But I'll be honest. When I saw the video Sunday night, I laughed. So that's where I'm coming from. But I see definitely where Ganassi's coming from as well. As you said, that's his guy, it's his driver, and really the guy that's had the most success in Chip Ganassi Racing Equipment probably ever at the cup level. So, Neff, another topic I want to discuss, and we riped on this a lot last year, with the inconsistency of cautions and what is a caution flag. That was again brought up this week. And I'll give NASCAR credit. There hasn't been many debris cautions this year. One of our colleagues at Front Stretch, Brian Keith, wrote about it last week, in the Did You Notice column that runs every Wednesday. But this week there was, I guess, a debris caution with Clint Bowyer. It looked like he definitely had a flat left front tire. Yet they threw the caution for that, yet they didn't throw a caution for, say, when Christopher Bell blew an engine. There was definitely smoke and it looked like oil being laid down on the track. Yes, below the racing surface, but in turn three, turn four, that is the racing surface. They race all the way down to the grass. And then also, you know, we just mentioned the Hamlin-Larson dust-up. I would say that was more of a caution than the Bowyer incident, even though, you know, Larson didn't throw debris all over the track from what we could see. But I didn't see any debris personally coming off of Bowyer's car, and they threw the caution. It was during the middle, a cycle of green flag pit stops, which alters the race of many competitors.
Agreed.
And it caught, I think, Bubba Wallace like two laps down, and I know he wasn't very happy about it, vocal on the radio. So I guess, what's your opinion on this? Because we discussed this, you know, in length last year, but it looks like it's back again this year with inconsistency with caution flags.
I again, they've been promising us for years that we could sit in race control for a race, and I still want to, just to hear the discussion that goes on. Because, and I wonder if there was discussion. I mean, because obviously they threw it out pretty quickly, and in looking at him on TV and seeing, yes, there were some sparks coming off the splitter, but I didn't see a tire carcass. I didn't see pieces of rubber flying. The fender didn't get ripped apart, so there was nothing, any kind of, you know, any kind of crush panels or anything like that that got damaged. So I didn't see any reason for there to be a caution for that. And again, I'm one of those that believes in erring on the side of conservancy. And if, even when guys spin, if they get it gathered back up and they're out of the racing groove while they're gathering it up, I give them a chance to get the thing refired to get going before I ever throw a caution. And heck, these things, the cars get turned sideways. Hell, Matt Kenseth locked up the brakes going into three at Richmond and threw a caution on it.
So I remember that.
Yeah, there needs to be, I don't know, I don't want to say imminent danger, but there needs to be visual evidence of unsafe conditions in order to throw a caution. And I just feel like there's so few to begin with because it's so hard to spin these cars out now that we really need to be judicious on the ones we're throwing and just not making willy-nilly decisions.
Yeah, those are valid
willy-nilly.
Points.
Willy-nilly. When's the last time you used willy-nilly in a car?
Those are valid points for sure. And I'll give NASCAR credit. They haven't thrown many debris cautions this year. And also, you know, even when drivers have spun in the past, they've been quick to throw the caution flag, and sometimes rightfully so. But I think of, like, this year at Daytona in the truck race. I was sitting in the press box. I want to say it was Corbin Forrester went for a spin. And then there's another one late in the race. I can't remember who that driver was. But they let him correct it. Both had incredible saves. You almost wonder how you can do that, you know, looking down on it. It just shows some of the talent to some of these drivers. But they did not throw the yellow flag. So it is, I guess it's good to see the NASCAR maybe has become more reluctant on throwing the yellow flag immediately. But then you look at this week and it's different with the Bowyer deal. So I guess it was a good thing that there was a caution, because outside of that, Neff, there would have been no cautions besides right. The stage breaks. So I guess hindsight's 20/20. But anything else you got to talk about with the cup race?
National anthem, real quick.
That was great.
I thought it was good. She got a couple little sections in there where she started going down the American Idol audition side, but she reined it back in, and I was okay with it. But, you know, everybody losing their minds. I'm like, I thought it was good, but the throaty singing, there was just a little embellishment there. And for those of you that are longtime podcast listeners or first-time podcast listeners, I am very adamant about our national anthem being sung the way it was written. This is not an American Idol audition. This is paying respect to our country. If you want to do God Bless America, do whatever you want to do. If you want to do any of the other songs, do whatever you do. But when it's our national anthem, sing it the way it's sung. Don't be acting crazy. But that said, if I could sing like that at 8 years old, man, that she did an amazing job. And the girl on the Xfinity race, too. Yeah. I mean, she was 10, I think, and was just as impressive. It was amazing. I don't know where they find that talent. But they both did a great job.
Yeah, they're both in the right city, being out in L.A., for sure. So that was really – I thought it was really good. And I'm like you. I don't like – I just want you to sing the national anthem and be respectful. And, you know, for an 8-year-old singer, that was incredible, though. Yep. And she's got a bright future, I would say. Now, you brought up Xfinity. Neff, Harrison Burton got his first NASCAR win, obviously coming to the Xfinity race. Holding off his teammate Riley Herbst, who I was surprised, you know, he ran so well. And also Austin Cindric. Really good battle there at the end. But how much did Harrison impress you on Saturday? Because there was so much talk, obviously, going into the year about him taking over the 20 for Bell. And, you know, between the driver lineup at JGR this year, really going young with Herbst, Burton, and Brandon Jones. And Brandon Jones dominated this race until he got in the wall in the third stage, swept the first two stages. that they were going to be bad this year and they weren't going to win at all. And they've heard it all. And I talked to Riley Herbst about it coming up for a front stretch Eyes on Xfinity piece coming up in the coming months. But what was your take on this? Because he impressed the hell out of me, I'll be honest. Because as last year we saw, he didn't perform up to par for KBM equipment.
I've always been a believer in Harrison Burton. I think he's got a lot of talent. I have felt like he might be getting pushed along a little quickly. Again, I would have loved to have seen him do another year in trucks. Honestly, would have liked to have seen him do a little more super late model racing before he even got into trucks. But I have always felt like he was very talented, and I thought that he handled his situations, especially like last year when Menard dumped him at New Hampshire.
Mm-hmm.
He seems very wise beyond his years, and I think he did a great job of handling the year at KBM and recognizing it for the learning experience that it was, and I think that has helped him, and I think he's doing a great job so far this year with the pressure on him. Because let's face it, you're jumping in a car that should have won a championship and won a ton of races. So it's time for you to step up and get it done. And he stepped up and got it done. And I was glad for him. I thought he did a great job at the end in making some smart decisions and driving it the way he needed to. And in the end of it, he won the race. And I was happy for him. Happy for his old man. I know that he just got more money than some, but not near as much as a lot, and has put a lot into getting Harrison this opportunity. But Harrison has made the most of it and continues to make the most of it. And I was happy for him. I was happy for the Burtons. I was happy for Coach, you know, because Coach is under some pressure too for moving him up at 19 years old into Xfinity already. So I thought it was a good story for everybody involved, and I agree with you. They are young this year, and I think they're all going to surprise a lot of people because, like you said, Brandon Jones was a class of the field until he made a mistake.
Yeah, I totally agree with you on the Harrison aspect. He ran 9 races, obviously, last year, had a top 5. You mentioned the run-in with Menard in New Hampshire. He had 5 top 10s, though, and I know his average finish might not be deceiving of where he ran, 16.8, but I thought personally, for whatever reason, he just fit better with the cars compared to the trucks at KBM. I don't know what it was or what it is, but he's proved at the beginning of this year, he's got 3 top 5s in 3 races. His average finish is 2.7. Daytona finished 2nd, Vegas 5th, Fontana obviously the win, and he's qualifying the top 10 each of the 3 starts. And you're running for the best Xfinity organization in the past, what, 15 years? I mean, with what Kyle's done, obviously. But then even the likes, they've developed a lot of talent, whether it be Christopher Bell, Eric Jones, Daniel Suarez. All these guys have come through the ranks. You know, starting off at programs like Kyle Busch Motorsports, moving up to Joe Gibbs Racing in the Xfinity Series. And I think there's definitely a lot of pressure this year on the three young drivers. But I think like you, think they're going to impress a lot of people this year. And I think Harrison's obviously started off about as good as you can get with 3 top 5s in the 3 races. And Brandon Jones, too. I know a lot of people criticize Brandon. Sometimes he tries to do too much with his equipment. Obviously, a lot of people say he's playing with daddy's money. But I've always been a fan of the way Brandon drives. And I think he's going to have a breakout year this year. I really do. I wouldn't be surprised, honestly, if he got to the Final Four at Phoenix. I mean, last year he would have had he didn't get bounced out in the first round because he won Kansas. So I definitely think they're going to surprise some people this year, but the 18, 19, and 20 in Xfinity.
I agree. I mean, and like you said, the JGR Xfinity program has been right up there. Only one rivaling, I think, is Penske. And they've even stumbled a little bit here the last couple of years. But for a while there, Penske's Childress 22 car especially was 2nd to none. And, yeah, and Childress.
And Junior Motorsports. Junior Motorsports probably is the best sole Xfinity team.
Yeah.
In terms of no cup affiliation, really.
In theory.
Yeah.
I mean, that if you're going to get in that 20 car, you better get it done. And same with the 18. Both of those cars can win and win any given week. And if you're not up there running in it, and I'm with you though. I was dumbfounded that Harrison did not do more in the trucks from KBM, because you know that equipment is good, and it just, it never seemed to work out. So I'm happy for everybody involved that it's working out. And like I said, I think you could, that whole organization could have a really good year, and getting a win this early does nothing but boost the whole group.
Agreed. It was also cool to see Ryan Sieg, man, back-to-back top five finishes for the first time in his career. He finished fourth. I think he's definitely going to win a race by the end of the year. I thought that last year too, but with the big three from last year, you know, taking up 21 of the 33 wins, it's wide open this year for him. I think he gets a win. You had Jeremy Clements getting his first top 10 of the year, and then Josh Williams, last week's podcast guest, finished 10th, his first top 10 on a non-super speedway. So these smaller teams are coming to play, and it was cool to see them get a lot of love on Twitter on Saturday after the Xfinity race from guys like Mark Martin, who's, I know he's a big Josh Williams fan, and then also David Reagan gave both of them a shout out as well. So, you know, I think talent rises in the end, and obviously these guys don't have the most money, although it's cool to see, you know, Ryan Sieg have a full-time sponsor this year with CMR Roofing. But it's definitely good to see them, these smaller teams with a very tight budget, especially DGM Racing, with Mario Gosselin. Obviously, Josh is the full-time driver in the 92. Have good runs. It's definitely what their program needs, and who knows? I mean, Siegel, I'd imagine, be a lock-in for the playoffs, but that 12th position is really kind of wide open in Xfinity, and a small team's going to get it. It's either probably going to be the 51 of Clements, maybe Josh Williams. Right now, Alex LeBay holds it, but I don't believe he's running the full season, and then also you got Brandon Brown, who's, I think, he's performed pretty well in the first two races. Last week he got in a wreck. But I know you're a fan of Sieg too, Neff, and he's performed really well.
Yeah, I'm thrilled that they got funding, and now they're able to show what they've always been able to do if they just had the funding. And that's always that, you know, the chicken and the egg story. You need the funding to go fast, but unless you go fast, you can't get funding. And the last year they had the hard lemonade sponsor for some of their year. And I think that just that piece gave them a little bit of a boost and showed more of what they were capable of. And now this year, having a full-time sponsor, I think, is really taking them to a whole nother level. And I will be shocked if the 39 doesn't end up in victory lane at some point this year. And who knows? You want to shock the world. Imagine him winning the championship at Phoenix. That would be unbelievable.
That would definitely be one of the maybe biggest upset as far as championships in NASCAR history. I mean, there's obviously been some of them in the past, but that'd be, I mean, they only got like six full-time employees. So that is good to see them perform well. But Neff, I to end the podcast, at least from my aspect in terms of topics, I want to talk a little bit about 2021. And why is that? Well, because this week on Monday, NASCAR announced that the single lug nut is coming to the Cup cars next year with the next gen car. I'm just going to give this to you now because I know you're going to go off with a rant, because I know that we're both not in favor of this at all.
I mean, I don't know that I'm going to go off on a rant. I just don't get it. The premise of the 2021 car is to bring stock back to stock car racing. We're going to have independent rear suspensions. We're going to have rack and pinion steering, other things that are on your cars in the showroom now. Outside of a Porsche, I don't know of anybody else that's got a one lug nut tire.
Yeah, I don't know anyone.
So I don't get what the story or the logic behind it is that they're going to these aluminum wheels because they look cool. I don't know why. Instead of having the steel wheel that we have had since God invented NASCAR. But they're saying that if you had five lug nuts on an aluminum wheel and just one of them was not tight, the vibration or whatever activity of the loose wheel would just destroy the aluminum wheel. Okay, then don't do aluminum wheels. I don't get why we... I don't know why we're going to a bigger tire. B, I don't know why we're going to the aluminum wheels. If anything, I'd like to see him go to a tire that's like 6 inches wide, like on your passenger car, and, you know, take some of this grip away from these things and make these guys drive them. But the single lug nut thing is weird because I heard a brief discussion about it early on when they were doing his testing on this thing, but it didn't seem to have any traction.
And now all of a sudden, it picked up.
The way we're going.
Yeah, it picked up over the past couple of tests with that next gen car. And, you know, you mentioned the bigger wheel. And right now we run, a 15-inch steel tire. Now we're moving to an 18-inch center lock aluminum wheel, the center lock being the one lug nut. And the price difference is drastic.
Oh, the tires, the wheels are literally, it's like $1,000 a wheel more.
And that's a ton. That adds up for sure.
Well, yeah, when you look at how many sets did they have this weekend in Fontana for the race? 12?
Probably.
So you have 12 sets for the race. You got another 5 that you go through in practice and stuff. So just round it up to say you have 20 sets of rims for your car at conservatively $1,500 a rim. $300,000 worth of rims. Just rims. And they're aluminum. So guess what? Bounce it off the wall like Larson did off the nose of Hamlin, those rims are junk. They're not holding up to bouncing off a wall like a steel rim will. You're not going to have concrete dust inside the rim like you do with a steel tire.
And I saw some of John Probst's comments about this, and he mentioned how he wants to get it closer to the two-year everyday car. I drive a Toyota Corolla, they want to get it closer to that, or Chevy Camaro, or whatever. So, this is the first time in how many decades that it's been like this. And this isn't Formula One, this isn't IndyCar. Over the past 10 years or so, really the past probably 5 for sure, the element of racing has kind of gone out the window in terms of managing an engine. we think back in the day, like the Coke 600 was so popular back, one of the reasons was so popular because it was the longest race of the year. But in theory, also, you had to manage your engine. That's gone out the window. And now we're really getting rid of the concept of pit crews. You know, they're not making a change yet. Who knows if they will in terms of the amount of people they'll have on a pit crew. But the element of mistakes, I mean, that sometimes dictates a race. I mean, we saw this week with Truex, even though it's a little bit of a different concept with the tire changer having a cramp in his arm. That's what they said on the telecast. But right. if you miss a lug nut, or you miss two lug nuts, or something gets hung up, now you get one instead of 5. I don't know. I'm not a fan of it at all. At all.
And the other one, and I know, again, I've been around racing for a long time, and I remember when we, when they were first getting these single lug deals in IndyCar, and a lot of times you would get cross-threading, and they would have to, you know, the wheel would lock up, and they'd bring it back in, and you'd have to pound the thing off, and then they'd have to get a tool out and re-thread the stud to get the tire back on. And I am sure the first year, you know, even if it's the first half of the year, first quarter of the year, the first year that they start using these things, we're going to have that. And it's not going to be a good optic. But it'll be interesting because you miss a lug nut on this one, you're going to know it really quick. Because, you know, if you don't have your one lug nut tight, that tire is going somewhere.
Yeah. And I see that, you know, Probst said that the durability of the new wheels decreases by 30% with 5 lug nuts compared to 1. So they've obviously tested both of them, but I don't know. It's just, for me, it takes some of the stock out of stock car racing.
Agreed. And like I said, the whole premise of this new car was to bring more stuff from the showroom back into racing. and nowhere do I know of a single lug tire.
So, yeah, me too.
I don't know. And again, I know I'm grumpy old get off my lawn guy. I saw one of the things that somebody was talking about it being a boomer, an okay boomer deal. And I said, that's just because, you know, 80% of the people that are saying okay boomer don't know how many lug nuts are on a tire. Because half of them don't have their driver's license. You know, so it is what it is. I just, again, there's other things to get upset about in this sport. But I don't like the aesthetic of it. And it bothers me because I have always marveled at the ability of tire changers. And the fact that they can take off five lug nuts, swap out a tire, and tighten five lug nuts back on in under 5 seconds is just, it's mind-boggling. And the pit stops in IndyCar and especially Formula One. Well, Formula One, they're exciting for a different reason because it's amazing they do everything they do in right. 2 seconds. But
they got 20 people going over the wall.
Right, you got that many guys over the wall. In the IndyCar, I'm not that excited about their pit stops. You know, they have a pit stop competition on Carb Day every year at Indy, and it used to be a thing, but anymore it's unimpressive. And that's where I've always been impressed by NASCAR pit stops, and I think we are getting drastically close to the line of where they will be unimpressive.
Yeah, I agree with you totally. Now, this is just coming in, and this happened, well, I don't know when it happened exactly, but I saw this picture come in, it happened 3 hours ago. Apparently, I would imagine it's yesterday, since it came out at 8:58 this morning, and that would be 5:58 out west. But I guess William Byron, I don't know if it wrecked the Gen 7 car, or he just spun out, but there's a picture online of him spinning out. It's hard Whee! To, yeah, it's interesting, because they only have, to my knowledge, that one made.
I mean, that's why you test them, figure stuff out, and sometimes things will happen, but it's usually they are conservative and not really pushing the limits on those things, but you never know. I mean, maybe he blew a tire coming out of the pits on a qualifying run.
Angela Rock.
Thank you very much.
Which that...
I'll be here all week.
That escalated even more so over the past week. Oh, my God.
Yeah, we should probably touch on that briefly.
Sure, let's go for it.
Don't leave your phone around unless you have a lock code on it.
Do you think he actually tweeted that, though? I'm pulling up the tweet now, but...
I really do. I mean, I...
You think he tweeted it?
I think he tweeted it.
So...
It is so out of character for her.
Well, you know, maybe we talked about this a little last week about the whole her spinning off pit road at Vegas for truck qualifying, Parker kind of calling her out for qualification standards for the top three series, and then her, you know, or I'll quote the tweet: "Dipshit, I blew a tire. The difference," which she's he or she whoever tweeted this out, misspelled difference between me and you, little B. It's bitch. Is I make my own path. In fact, if you do not shut your trap, I'll slap your little ass. Sad little fellows that no one dated in high school. And then that next morning, Angela quotes her own tweet, or what she says her husband tweeted from her phone. Wow, where do I start? Obviously a tweet that was sent from my account last night that's caused a little bit of a stir. Truth is, my husband Mike responded from my phone. He was pretty upset with the comment from Parker. I probably... would have handed it a bit different, LOL, but I love the support. Apparently, and she did, she made him her husband a Twitter account. But Neff, this is just crazy.
Well, and I would like him to tell us which tire blew. Because two of them blew because she was sliding down to the infield.
Right.
And near as we could tell, the two on the other side of the car stayed up. So I don't know what tire was blown. But that is neither here nor there. Don't leave your phone around if you don't have a lock code on it, if you can't trust your husband to not be an idiot. But it's the beauty of social media.
If I was her, I'd be pissed. If it's true, if he's the one that tweeted it.
Oh, I would too. Because now she's stuck, you know, in a no-win situation where she's got to try to defend whether she did it or didn't do it, whether he did it or didn't do it, it's going to be talked about.
Oh, yeah.
And it's drawing attention to an embarrassing situation that she would just as soon forget. And, yeah, it's a no-win for her for sure. And I would have liked to have been at the competition meeting at the Ruck household that Tuesday.
For sure. All right, Neff, we're going to Phoenix this week. We got two races. First, the Xfinity race. Who you got going to victory lane?
Allgaier's going to get it done, daggone it. Some bitch has got to win a race eventually.
Yeah, I mean, this is... He broke his winless streak last year over a year in the fall here. He's definitely going to be tough to beat. I think Harrison will run well as too. I know I talked to Briscoe about Phoenix last week, about 10 days ago now, and he's happy that drivers like Kyle Busch and Brad Keselowski are running this race, which, I mean, let's be honest, Kyle Busch will probably win the race.
Yeah.
But he's glad that they're running it because he'll be able to test kind of what it's like for championship weekend come November. As far as a winner, why not? I'll go with Briscoe. I think Allgaier's going to win, but I'll go Briscoe. Because Briscoe, you know, he says this is one of his probably two worst tracks on the schedule. But, I mean, you looked at how much he's improved since he first started in Xfinity, and it's leaps and bounds. So I'll go Chase Briscoe getting his second win of the year. But on Sunday, we got the Cup race. As I said, Toyota's dominated the last three or four races, really, at Phoenix. Is it Toyota going to victory lane, Neff, or you got someone else?
Man. See, when you're old, you remember stuff. And that tends to bite you in the ass. The Fords have been, outside of Penske, have been struggling a little. But, God, Harvick is good at Phoenix.
It's a playground.
I know. That's where I'm like, I think I'm going to go Harvick.
Got it. I got to go Kyle Busch. He runs well.
I mean, that was the other choice.
Yeah. I mean, but like I said, you know, during the bulk of this podcast, if they don't perform, if Toyota doesn't, you know, have a good weekend and show the raw speed that they've had in the past, it will be worrisome, especially because the championship race is at Phoenix this year in just 8 months. And obviously a lot will happen over the time of the year. And Toyota will figure it out, even though, like I said, it's an overreaction now. But I say Kyle Busch gets the victory this weekend at Phoenix.
Good call.
All right, well, we've got Anthony Alfredo coming up on the podcast to discuss his sixth-place run in his first race for Richard Childress Racing in the Xfinity Series race last week at Fontana. So let's hear what he has to say in my conversation with Anthony Alfredo. All right, Anthony, you started 13th and finished 6th in your Xfinity debut last week in Auto Club Speedway. Overall, just take us through your race.
So we fired off, as you mentioned, we qualified 13th, and I felt like we fired off at the balance of the race car a little bit too tight, difficult to turn the car through the center of the corner and up on exit, which they kind of had me trending towards that way anyways because it was my first race, and we lost just about half our practice time, if not more, from a car that the motor blew up in practice and oiled the track down. So I wasn't super comfortable yet in the car at the track, and that, you know, being a little bit on the tighter side helped me get acclimated and comfortable. So as the most comfortable I got, we continued to free the car up throughout the race, and it got a lot better by the end. I felt like the car was really, really great. It's easy to say I wish we could have fired off that way, but I probably wasn't comfortable enough to drive the car in the beginning like I could at the end. But we definitely had a little bit of an uneventful first couple stages, just kind of rode around where we were at. I was just getting comfortable. One thing I did learn is these races are much longer than anything else I've competed in. Everyone kind of settles down and rides where they're at. So that's kind of what we did for the first part of the race. And then the last stage is where you go at it and get as many spots as you can. There's plenty of restarts to take advantage of. And by being aggressive on restarts, I found myself around the top five, and we were in there for the majority of the last stage, and we're able to stay there and secure a solid finish.
Yeah, so you kind of hit on this, but, you know, like you said, you kind of rode around for the first two stages, didn't finish in the top 10. So what did the team improve on throughout the race to get you up to that fifth position and then ultimately finishing sixth?
That's a great question. So the the pit crew guy did an awesome job on pit road, getting me out fast. We were the first stall, so we were able to kind of go straight out and gain a couple positions once in a while. But also, we just kept getting the balance of the race car better and better. By the end, it was to my liking and to my comfort level, a lot more confident in my ability behind the wheel and in what the car could handle as well. So that helped a lot. And then at that point, I was able to push it a lot harder, be more aggressive, racing others as well, just on the restart, and gain a ton of positions. There was one time I went into turn three, I believe I was 10th, and by the time I entered turn one, I was 6th. So I passed four cars just in the front straightaway. I looked back at the broadcast, but unfortunately, I think they missed it. But it was pretty awesome, if you ask me. So that was a really great spot right there. And then by the time we were there, that's where we ran the rest of the race. We had a car capable of running up there, so it was just a matter of getting the track position and being able to maintain it.
And you're a Connecticut native, and obviously the trucks, which you had experience in previous to this race, at least at the national level, doesn't race at Auto Club Speedway. So had you ever even seen the track before this weekend?
I have not. I've never raced at Auto Club Speedway, and I've never been in a NASCAR Xfinity car because we never tested either.
Right. So I'd imagine there's going to be a lot of times like that this year where you're going into races at tracks you've never really been to, and this will be your first time going there. So what's that mindset like?
That's a great question. So that was kind of what I tackled in the truck series last year, when majority of the racetracks I went to, just about every single one was new to me. Some of those I'm returning to in the NASCAR Xfinity Series car this year. However, there are plenty of new ones, like you mentioned, just like Auto Club Speedway. So the biggest thing is just taking advantage of the simulator and getting comfortable with the track, the line, where you need to be, understanding where the bumps are, how they affect the handling of the race car, and at the very least, just get a good visual.
Right, and like you mentioned, the simulator, there's a lot of things you can do to prep for the races or the tracks you haven't been at, but throughout your career, how quickly have you been to adapting to new racetracks once you get to the track?
So that's a really great question, and I think I adapt very quickly to things like that, or mm-hmm. new things, I should say. I believe that's something that has helped me in my career, you know, getting to where I'm at and learning new things. I think that's probably one of my strong suits, is just understanding or figuring out new cars I'm driving or new tracks and how to get around them pretty quickly. There might only have been a couple places where I had a tough time figuring them out earlier in my career, but that helps a lot, because the practice sessions are really short now. You get one 50 or 55 minute session and one 25 minute session. So that's not a lot of time at all, and you got to be able to take full advantage of that. So the less time you spend trying to figure out the racetrack, the more you can focus on just going fast and getting the balance of your race car better.
For sure. Now this year you're running part-time in the 21 for RCR. After running part-time last year in trucks for DGR Crosley, with limited experience, why do you feel like this was the right time to move up to Xfinity?
So I've been asked that a lot, and the biggest thing is that my goal for next year is to run full-time in the NASCAR Xfinity Series and compete for a championship. And in order to do that, I feel like getting plenty of experience this year is going to help me come out next year and head to Daytona ready to win a championship. So this year, you know, it's a big step in my career, especially after only running 11 or 12 Truck Series races last year. It's a huge step, obviously, and I know that, but it's really important to me to get that valuable experience, build the chemistry with the race team, and have the opportunity to grow within that organization. And to be honest, you know, they believed in me and provided me this opportunity and helped make it all work. So that's kind of a confidence booster too, because I knew it was a big step and I was a little bit timid about taking that step. But to have people like Richard Childress himself, Mike Dillon, Danny Lawrence, everybody at RCR just believe in me and tell me I could do it is just kind of a little bit of a confidence booster, obviously. But also, like I said before, my goal was full-time next year. And you see a lot of these guys come out of the trucks and struggle, you know, their first year of Xfinity, or at least the first half of the season, because of trying to figure it out. For me, I didn't even run full-time, number one. And number two, I'm just running part-time this year, so I can focus on just getting the experience for next year. But I feel like all the people who said I wasn't ready for this, I kind of proved them wrong last weekend, so that was rewarding.
And you mentioned, and I kind of want to ask you a question off of that. You said they believe in you and that what your goal is for next year, but did you personally feel like you were ready for this out, or was this an opportunity you just couldn't pass up?
A little bit of both. I mean, I felt like I could definitely take this step because I have the best people around me and the best equipment. So, you know, it's difficult to take that step if you don't have the best people to lean on and learn from.
Mm-hmm.
But I do, especially my teammates, Austin Dillon and Tyler Reddick. So that helps tremendously. And then, like you said, you know, them believing in me was just motivating. And for me, I knew it was going to be challenging. But to be honest with you, when I got into a truck last year, I was a little bit uncertain about taking that step in my career. So, and it went pretty well. So, I was ready to take that leap and, just know that I was running plenty of races to have time to figure it out. And I feel really confident after the first one now. So I'm looking forward to just continuing to get better each week and competing for wins sooner rather than later.
And Richard Childress is obviously a NASCAR icon. What was the original meeting like with Richard Childress?
That's a great question. It was pretty surreal. Obviously, many people know my story. I grew up a race fan. Nobody in my family raced or anything like that. And the craziest part is my parents visited RCR 25 years ago as race fans. And I grew up with my bedroom painted with the three scheme and all sorts of cool stuff and memorabilia. So it was pretty surreal, obviously, to not only meet him, but be considered to drive his race car. And it was really awesome because on Saturday, he was one of the first ones outside the car when I got out to congratulate me and tell me I did a great job. And it meant a lot to me coming from someone like that, obviously. That's a pretty big statement. So it's just been an honor, and I'm really proud to be representing the organization and just be a part of their family. But I'm looking forward to growing with them.
That's a good story. But obviously, you know, this sport moves very quickly, and yes, you got a six last week, but not in the car this week, running part-time, like we said. How challenging is it not going back to the track the weekend after you had such a solid finish?
It's very difficult, and the biggest thing is consistency and I'm trying to think of the word, momentum, that's it. Mm-hmm. Momentum and consistency are the two biggest things, and being able to run regularly and carry momentum, especially after a run like we had last week, is huge. So it's unfortunate that we're not racing this weekend, or I'm not in the car, but I know the guys are going to go do a great job, and, you know, every time someone's in the car, we're still building notes and learning, all of us as a team, so... that's great. I did run Phoenix a little bit in the simulator, even though I'm not running either of the races there. And I was really fast, so I'm bummed I'm not going there.
Now, Anthony, I've never interviewed you one-on-one before, so I want to get a little know you a little bit better about your racing background. In 2017, I know you ran the Cards Late Model Tour. 2018, K&N for Mark McFarlane. Last year, obviously, part-time in trucks, now Xfinity. How did you originally get turned on to racing? You mentioned you were a fan as a little kid.
Yes, that's exactly what it was. I grew up watching my parents, and my parents have done a lot for me. Not only did they spark my interest and ultimately my passion in racing, but they've just been there ever since I started supporting me. And my dad's never missed a race since I started 5 years ago. My mom's missed, I could count on one hand, probably only four or so, because she's either been sick or had something she had to attend. So it means a lot to me. It makes it really fun, because like I said, we are watching them as a family, my brother and sister as well, so... To be able to go to the racetrack together and all enjoy it is really cool and really special. And really, I just decided I was playing other sports at the time when I was going through middle school and high school and freshman year of high school. I was like, man, I want to try racing because I did a little bit of rental kart racing when I was younger.
Mm-hmm.
Nothing too serious. You know, anyone can do that. And that's where everyone who asks me where to get started, I tell them that just because it's a pretty simple way to get started, just get your feet wet. So at the time, I was like, man, I want to try this out. And that's when I got into a legend car. I only ran about 10 or 12 races. And then I was fortunate enough to get in Leaf Off Racing's late model stock car. It was actually a limited late model. Ran that for a year, actually 2 years. One was like kind of a partial schedule. Won a championship. Then I went to Junior Motorsports, as you mentioned. Had a fantastic year in the cars for there. And then it kind of just took off from there. I've been like almost like 1 year at every level, even though some of them have been part-time. So been very blessed and worked hard. So I'll just continue to keep learning and taking advantage of all the amazing opportunities and just keep going from there.
And you mentioned how you started just 5 years ago racing for the first time. How surprised are you that your career's kind of taken off so quickly?
It's a hard question to answer because obviously this is always what I've dreamed of. And I'm not going to say that I never believed I could do it, but as with anything, there's hard times and there's high highs and low lows. And some of the years have been difficult or, you know, we've had some consecutive races that were difficult. And to be here is just, I wouldn't say, like, I don't want to say it's a shock, like I said before, but it is definitely just still pretty crazy just because I've always dreamt of this, and for it to actually be a reality is surreal. So I just want to – I'm nowhere near where I want to be. My ultimate goal is to be a Cup Series champion, but that doesn't mean I don't step away and just appreciate where I've gotten and everything God's blessed me with. So I just want to continue, you know, going one step at a time and getting to where I want to be someday. But obviously, like you mentioned, it's still pretty unbelievable to be where I'm at right now, and that's why it's so important to me to just continue to take full advantage of the opportunity and just continue to have weekends like we did last weekend.
I got a couple more for you, Anthony. You mentioned your long-term goal, at least in terms of next year and then also potentially being a Cup champion as a major goal in the future. But for this year, what are your goals for 2020 in the 21 car?
So my first goal is definitely qualify, finish top 10. I didn't qualify top 10, but I finished top 10, almost out of top 5 there. We're just about side-by-side at the line. So we'll build on that. You know, Homestead's get my next race, and that's going to be a challenge. But we'll go one at a time and, you know, continue to compete, I think, you know, for top 5 week in and week out, especially as I continue to get more comfortable and confident. And I'm very confident that we'll be able to be competing for wins soon, you know, especially if we just keep the momentum rolling. I continue to learn. We continue to grow the team. And I'm looking forward to that because I know we could win some races this year. So that would be the ultimate goal this year. Obviously, I'm not in the points, so I can't say I'd go for a championship, but I can say our goal is to win races and secure enough sponsorship, continue to do well, and gain exposure so that we could run full-time next season.
And is that kind of what you hope to prove in your starts, is to, whether it's Richard or another team owner, is to prove that you belong here for a full season?
Exactly.
Cool, man. Well, I appreciate your time, and good luck at Homestead, and good job on the 6th-place finish this past weekend at Fontana.
Thank you very much. I appreciate your time.
All right, y'all. There you have it. Fun conversation there with Anthony. I actually learned a lot because before that conversation, I'd really never interviewed Anthony one-on-one. And if Fontana is any indication of what he can prove this year, what he can do in an RCR car, he could be in contention for some wins later this year based on his experience level as, you know, it goes throughout the year. Always enjoy chatting with Neff. Those rants on the single lug nut was fun because we believe that takes a big part of the stock out of stock car racing. Regardless, like the current aero package that we, you know, came into play last year, this will definitely take some time to get used to. And as we've seen through the first two races of this year with the aero package, so far so good. Thanks for tuning in to this week's show. And again, make sure to rate, review, and subscribe to the Front Judge Podcast, as those ratings truly do help us. Until next week's show, where we review a weekend of racing at Phoenix, we out.